Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Weird Things podcast. I'm Bryce Castillo, filling in for Andrew Main, joined as always with Justin Robert Young.
You're not Andrew.
I'm not Andrew, no.
You're not Andrew, you fraud.
No.
You fraud?
I was on the show last week, too, and Brian Brushwood.
Okay, all right, listen, you make a bunch of good points. Welcome back. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, and Brian?
Hey, man, look at that. Nailed it. Got that tweet in just in time. In case you're listening and you're wondering whether or not I'm tweeting about the fact that we're live recording this at twitch.tv/nightattack.
Sure.
In your face, guy, you were right.
Is but not is anymore because I'm not doing it now. That's very much like I'm not touching you.
I'm not tweeting you. I'm not tweeting you.
Jen, we have a lot of topics to cover today. The first one, I want to give a shout out to Justin Robert Young, who is on this panel for tweeting about today. Brian, I don't know if you've got a chance to see this yet. This is a clip from 60 Minutes last night.
Oh, no, I have not seen this.
45,689. Divided by 67.
Sure.
He silently asks the computer and then hears the answer through vibrations transmitted through his skull and into his inner ear.
6, 8, 1, 9, 2, 5.
Exactly right.
One more. What's the largest city in Bulgaria and what is the population?
The screen shows how long it takes the computer to read the words that he's saying to himself.
Sophia, 1.1 million?
That is correct.
Pause real quick. Just for the audio listeners, what we're seeing is we're seeing somebody who looks like his jaw is wired shut. I guess keep going. I want to know where
well, this is just a brief clip of the experiment from this episode of 60 Minutes.
Sublinguating? I don't know what to call it. Sub-vocalizing? Like talking without talking? Or
kind of. Describe what you think it is before we tell you what it is, Brian.
Well, okay.
Because you could see a little bit of his throat moving a little bit.
Right.
In the clip, but he very much does not speak. His lips don't move until he's answering.
Okay, so here's what everybody gets wrong about magic: is you want to project onto someone a talent that you could imagine exists, and because you can imagine exists, you just assume that must be what he's doing. So what I'm tempted to do is, oh, he's learned like a tapping code or something. I remember thinking at some point that if I was navigating a menu, I could clack the right side of my teeth or my left side of my teeth, and you know, to swipe left, swipe right, and all that stuff. But I don't think there's a code. I think there's some kind of natural. Okay, given that an AI learns human speech, the AI doesn't know what any words mean or what the – all it has is a bunch of sounds that it correlates with a bunch of words. So I would guess that keeping your mouth closed and just sort of like ventriloquist style saying, you're like, hello, I'm talking without opening my teeth at all.
Okay.
Like that's not normal human speech.
Sure.
But – my guess is a computer could learn how to do that, just like human speech.
Okay.
And then now you're just doing the exact same thing with also your lip closed, which would be...
Sure. So dentist talk, basically. Right,
exactly. And then you, I would imagine you would just do that without bothering to vibrate your vocal cords.
Sure.
And I would imagine machine learning could figure out what all those words mean. Am I on the right track?
So, Justin, did you get to look into this news story at all?
I did, yeah. I'm thrilled by the possibilities. Although I am also rewatching it now with you guys, and not in the haste of trying to get a Twitter one-liner off. I do see the grand possibility that this is at the very least stretching its claims.
Sure.
Because the claim here, Brian, is that he is thinking these things, and it is reading his thoughts.
I don't believe that. I don't believe that at all. But explain to me why they say that.
Well, so this is a project that he calls Alter Ego. It is a wearable device. This is from CBSNews.com that intercepts electrical signals, which the brain normally sends to the vocal cords, and sends that information to a computer. The device doesn't capture a user's private thoughts. The user must deliberately activate the device by, quote, internally vocalizing, which is what happens when you read in your head or silently talk to yourself. So the idea here is that this device will actually intercept cognitive internal voice that you have inside your head and can turn that into data.
It channels the voice in your head. So not all your thoughts. It's not reading literally everything that you're thinking. It is you saying, like, I am saying this right now in your head is what would pop up, except his thing is going right to Google, and then it is feeding back information.
Results. So the equivalent back would be, for amputees that are using a bionic arm or whatever, they'll attach sensors and they'll say, don't just think about raising your arm. I want you to try to raise arm you don't have.
Exactly.
And so then they're like, okay, move arm. And then the sensors pick it up and that happens, right?
Yeah.
So likewise, I would imagine my guess is that's why you're seeing the flexing on the jaw and all that stuff, mm-hmm. is because it's not enough just to think out loud to yourself, I wonder what the...
Yeah. Instead, you may have to silently make your vocal cords
activate. You have to get right to that edge of actually saying or doing the thing, mm-hmm. without physically doing it.
Yeah. And so this is just one of many projects coming out of MIT's... what is it called? MIT Media Lab. They often... are referred to as the Future Factory here. The Media Lab was started in the 80s, and it's surprising the things that have come out of it, even though we today wouldn't attribute these things directly to that source. In 1997, the lab created a digital assistant that responded to verbal commands, a predecessor of Siri and the A word. In 1989, a project called Backseat Driver predated smartphone GPS today with a turn-by-turn navigation system. In fact, it was so early, MIT's lawyers did not patent it because they said no one would ever could ever make this a thing.
Wow!
Oh, I'm sorry. You need to fire that guy. Patent everything. Every crazy little bit and bobble. Mm-hmm.
And so Media Lab gets a lot of its funding from corporate sponsorships, and they kind of give those corporate partners first access to some of this tech. They've said corporate partners can't come and commission and say, hey, we need a thing that makes our cereal bigger. But they get access.
The struggle is real, by the way, with this tiny ass cereal.
It's so small right
now. It's about time. Bigger cereal, folks. Come on, fight for what matters.
But it's cool. Some of the other things that they show off in this sort of 60 Minutes coverage was a powered leg exoskeleton. Not just a prosthetic, but a skeleton you would wear on your legs that would support your walking.
Hey man, actions. Look, I read Iron Man issues 240 through 256. at what point he got shot and had his spine severed and could only walk as Iron Man and became obsessed with always being in the Iron Man armor. Sure, I get it.
Yeah. To quote one of the reporters who used it, the feeling of the exoskeleton that I was wearing is a little bit hard to describe. It's almost like something is kicking me in the heels. It's just propelling my feet forward, left, right, left, right. They're going faster, if you will, than I am mentally. So
he then added, Jane, get me off this crazy thing.
Can I? This is, I'm just going to say it.
Okay.
The feeling you're describing,
yeah,
with technology is the feeling Gen Xers feel about millennials, by which I mean you're all younger and you're all very, very smart. But damn it, Chad Johnson, I'm halfway through my sentence about how I want stuff set for the stage show and you nod and complete it, I'm like, no, that's not what I was going to say. That's a reasonable thing to say, but would you let me finish? Yes, you're right. Like, here's what I think it's going to be like.
What? Hold on. Can we go back? I lost the metaphor.
Sorry. Okay. So what I'm trying to do is translate.
Also, by the way, this came after Bryce warned us to please keep it short. But, go on about the millennials. No,
okay. So here's one of the things I noticed. Mm-hmm. And it's not just Chad. It's also Bryce and Brand. It's literally everybody 20 years younger and smarter and faster than me, right? Like
go ahead. No, go on. Tell me what I do. Tell me what I do.
Like, what you do is be smarter and faster and better than me, but also and which is 99% of the time exactly perfect. That's what's great, right? But that 1% of the time where there's a mismatch where it's jumping where you use your superior intellect, your superior speed of processing and your superior technological skill set, but it's in a different direction than I had intended, and like that idea of the that the idea of the machine saying like, yeah, I get it. You want to go forward. Shut up, old man. Like, I'm moving you forward. And then it's just like, no, I don't. God damn it. Would you listen to me, technology?
So you're saying that the exoskeleton is the loud kids playing on your lawn?
No, well, I mean, but they're playing better than I want them to play too. That's the hard part.
Yeah. No, the exoskeleton is the thing properly setting up his stage show that he's frustrated, didn't have to listen to the second half of his instructions.
So, I mean, let me make a more generic statement.
Sure.
I suspect that the new.
I hate Bryce. And I am infinitely furious with your youth.
No.
Nothing you can say or do that won't will change my perception that you are wasting youth that I could use better.
Right. Well, yeah.
And get off the grass.
Yeah.
The generic. Like,
and when did Twitter change?
280.
That's too many characters.
Now I gotta have a round icon.
I'm gonna be on Snapchat.
I is anything I'm saying like can you can you taste what I'm trying to get to?
I think I grok the core of what you're trying to get at, which is that. I mean,
let me put it this way. Okay. Imagine a 95-year-old geriatric man who is surrounded by a bunch of very talented orderlies in their mid-20s or whatever. Mm-hmm. And instead of it being a robot helping him walk, it's them helping him walk. And what he wants to say is, no, slow down. That's not where I want. But he can't get the words out because of his dumb, old, stupid, addled head, right? That is a universal, very human experience that now we're for the first time going to experience with technology. And the technology is genuinely going to be trying to do the right thing, just like, the orderlies helping Hugh Hefner around.
Rest in peace.
R.I.P. y'all.
The technology, the issue of people not understanding you will become a very visceral technological interface.
Yes, what I'm saying is what a wonderful echo of a long-standing human analog that we are seeing in a brand new technological form. That's what I'm saying. That idea of the legs are kicking you forward because it knows what you want, or at least it thinks it knows what you want. And of course, the terrifying down the road hypothesis is, well, what if the machines don't want what we want, just like the millennials don't want what the Gen Xers want. That's what I was headed for.
I think there's a very
noted natural enemies.
I think there's a very modern I think you find experiences like that with technology today, especially when you have something that you have to put a lot of trust into and you don't immediately get. Like, the thing I first thought of was like, oh, well, when I use GPS navigation and if I miss a turn, then I have to like trust that it will get me on the right track, or I have to go along the path that it tells me, and that's maybe not the way that I normally would take, the route. It's a trust issue.
Well, and there should be a trust issue, because we've all had that experience where Waze told us to go some weird ass directions and as a result pulled a miracle off and we made the meeting in time. But we've also had there's a friend of ours who I don't want to name her name, but there was definitely a time we were supposed to go to the Salt Lick and somebody trusted the technology too much because she was very proud of. She was very confident in Android.
Wanted to do. Yeah, she just said directions to the Salt Lake into her phone, and then didn't check it.
Well, I mean, why would you? The phones are great. They're going to do everything right.
Oh, and we were halfway to the airport before we realized that it was sending us to the Austin International Airport, Salt Lake.
Which has Salt Lake in it. Yeah.
Salt Lake that's literally like 10 minutes from Brian's house.
Oh, my gosh. Well, hey, if there's a voice that you want to trust on the internet, it's the Weird Things Podcast.
Yeah.
And we're bringing it to you here every week. So why don't you kick us over a buck over at patreon.com/weirdthings.
Yeah, man. Head on over there right now. Patreon.com/weirdthings. Know that $0 are going to Andrew.
None. I mean, because zero. You know, that's a great thing about Androids. You don't have to pay them when they're on their quest to
hunt Santa.
Santa.
Listen, I'm gonna tell you this. Number one, Andrew's dead, and he's been replaced by a robot. And so anytime that he is on the show, just know that he's a robot. Hmm. Number two. When Andrew's robot familiar does grace this podcast again, which will be hopefully pretty soon.
In a couple weeks, yeah.
You will know where his death was squandered. It is it is going to be amazing to see what he has found now that he is an eternal android.
I mean, I don't want to spoil it, but he did find Santa.
He did. Oh, this is breaking news.
Well, I mean, he sent me a picture of him petting Santa. It was pretty amazing.
Petting
Santa. Oh, man. Oh, there's a couple pictures of Santa. Wow.
Right?
Ooh, wow. Wowzers.
And he's there.
I mean,
I know it's April,
so I guess he's not on the clock just yet, but wowzers.
I mean, he was at the North Pole, and he was wrapped up in all that Arctic gear. I mean, it looked amazing.
It looks pretty wild, man. You guys are really, really, really going to dig it. So how about this? He's no longer looking for Santa, but if you do know where Santa is, please go ahead and call Andrew, and you can get right through to him on any number, any area code. Just go ahead and dial 911.
Just call 911. Ask your parents' permission first.
Yeah.
And just say, Andrew, I found Santa.
And say, hi, is Andrew there?
And then hang up immediately. Don't pick the phone up again.
Also, don't do that.
Please don't. Don't do that.
Please don't. But if you did, I mean, what am I, your dad?
Okay, man, so, that walk back though.
So last week we talked briefly about virtual sightseeing. In the context of last week, it was more.
That actually reminds me about how mouthy millennials are. Like, just all over the place, doing cartwheels, having cardio. Like, what the hell's up with these people?
So last week.
Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, I swear to God, I hope all
ahead,
that was taken in the spirit
youth.
In which it was intended.
We'll see. We talked a little bit about virtual sightseeing. Last week, it was more specifically on like historical sightseeing and going back in time using meshed together data from other sources. But I wanted to kind of take a look at what virtual sightseeing is today. You know, we have things like Google Street View, which will give you, you know, 360 degree photos, right? And they'll do a lot of these for, you know, inside museums and stuff, right? But we also have pretty good technology to map out like things like LiDAR and 3D drones and stuff to get say, you know, 3D models of say, like a monument or
What are we looking right now?
So this is the Aimya Kyung Temple.
So it's not a birthday cake.
It does look a lot like one, though.
It would be a pretty dope birthday cake.
This is all parts of a whole, which I think are coming together with a new partnership from Google and an Oakland-based a startup called SciArc, called Open Monument, I believe is the name. So we've got a web app here. I'm going to click Begin Journey.
Okay, so I am just looking at this. This seems to be some kind of HTML5 3D Wonderland where it's taking like a pointillist 3D architecture, recreating monuments and whatnot.
That's right. This is Bagan, I believe, which is a historical World Heritage Site. What this company, SIAC, has done is gone in and using LIDAR technology and drones to recreate virtually these historic spaces. We can actually walk around.
That's really cool. Yeah. So basically you're walking around it as if it was just like a map in a video game.
Yeah. But, and it's got some voiceover moments
but this is a real place that exists already?
Yes, it does.
Okay. Because where I thought you were headed is like you could tell me, "Oh, this is that new ziggurat that they discovered that's underground." That you know, seismic scanning indicated exists. So it's like right now we're seeing it with an actual place being able to virtually visit there.
Yeah.
But we could do it for places that you can't physically even visit yet, but can experience like they were back in the day.
Yeah. Well, and the idea behind this open monument project is to target locations that are threatened by natural disasters. So some of the places that they are already, some of the places that they're looking at, including Bagan here, are spots that
not to get there. Climate change. Say it.
Yeah, that are threatened by climate change and just natural disasters. They've got some of this is showing up as like photo exhibits right now. Over time, their plan is to make more of these entire monument sites.
Can I, Justin, I'm going to say some stuff that's going to sound like heresy, and I wouldn't blame anyone who got so upset with this sentiment that they
just canceled their subscription and
I was going to say that they would tweet me nasty grams or whatever, but I have found that a very effective way to prevent myself from hoarding things is to, when it comes to spring cleaning, just take a picture of it, because you don't want to let this thing go because you're afraid that once that thing is not there, you'll lose a piece of that memory or that connection or whatever. So just take a picture of it and then throw it away. Give it away to Goodwill or whatever.
Okay.
I mean, well, if we did that with all the historical monuments.
We should try to keep them, though.
Why? It's just, they're just rocks. I mean, if we virtualize enough of it and we get the information that we want out of it.
That was great, because you oversold it, and then right at the very end, just dropped in nuke the monument. Like,
we don't need the space.
Hey, look, we did a thing. I had an old sweater. I took a picture of the sweater. It makes me feel good when I see the sweater. I have a picture not only in my mind, but in my heart and on my phone. Now let's just nuke the Eiffel Tower, because we've taken enough pictures.
Are you going to build
condos on Stonehenge?
Don't think about us dismantling the Eiffel Tower. Think about all the Cinnabons that can go there.
With a sweater, you can donate a sweater and like pay it forward. Well, yeah, We're not gonna give Chichen Itza to somebody.
Okay, but let's say.
But who would get it if we were? Who deserves Chichen Itza?
The Mayans, right?
I mean, well, they had it for long enough. So.
No, but here's my question, though, especially in the face of the very real danger of climate change and sea levels rising or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, how much money that might have? Do we want to spend? Let's say $1 trillion. Let's say it's an insane amount of money. You know, do we want to spend $1 trillion to build levees all around Venice to preserve Venice, or I don't know, feed the bottom billion, like radically transform the lives of a billion people, or do we want to preserve a city that's half sunk? Like virtualize that stuff. I almost said a bad word. I got so passionate, but virtualize all of it so we can experience Venice almost as perfectly as we can right now, and then just let the sea go over it, and meanwhile we'll feed everyone.
Now, the target's getting bigger, because we were talking about monuments, but people live in Venice.
Nah, not anymore.
They do.
Also, kill all those people.
Come on.
They're just producing greenhouse gases, man.
Well, Greylock makes a very good point. What about Louisiana, which is regularly sinking? Or any landlocked city. My hometown in Norfolk. Norfolk's landlocked?
Well, I mean...
just nuke it? Move to the cornfields, seafaring...
Let me restate it.
Water dogs?
Let me restate it this way. If it was possible to 100% preserve the architecture, the cultural heritage, everything that is valuable about these places, and save so much money that could be used for what universally, and imagine a situation, you know, that could be used for much greater good to save humanity and get us off this dumb rock. I can't think of a strong moral argument to, it starts to feel like hoarding. Why are we hoarding all these monuments? Just take a picture.
Hold on. Let me speak on defense of Brian's point. What if there is a point in which, let's say Monticello, for example,
sure,
Thomas Jefferson's home, that we have so virtualized every brick, and virtual reality, let's say, is enough of a thing that regularly you are exploring history, not only in what we just saw there, which is a very, very cool, I think, standard for like, hey, let's bring some of the functionality that is already in video games and stuff like that, but let's contextualize these sites using that kind of data. That's cool. But let's go one step further and say that it's in VR and you are watching simulations of those places at the points where they were their most relevant. You're watching Monticello as Thomas Jefferson invents, you know, the modern plow or something like that. Like, you, this is what you're doing. And now the physical version of it seems less like, is there a point
less
in
relevant.
Which it seems less relevant? Yeah, it is just old hardware where now we can experience the livelihood of this at its prime and not just look at an even well-maintained husk.
I guess a really similar analogy to me would be like art archival, right? Things that archivists do a lot of work to preserve old masterpieces, classic artwork, and a lot of that is just private funds. It's not like it's taxpayer money going to save any given piece at any given moment. And that's something that has essentially no physical footprint. And we can save that, you know, those works. We have techniques that are getting better over time. If the argument is like, you know, money could be better used for something else, I think that's
I'm not here for the money argument, but I do think that there is something here where if people are saying like, oh, well, if you had it virtualized, you wouldn't get the feel of the actual play.
I think it's the reverse.
What I'm saying is, what if we could?
And
what
even
if
better.
The feel of it virtually was better than what you could have when you were there.
Exactly. Like you don't go to Monticello because you want to touch an old piece of wood. You go to Monticello to get as close to the feeling of what it must have been like when this place was alive. And if you have a refined, superior feeling-based experience, why would you hop on a plane, belch out a bunch of CO2 to get there, pay too much for a hotel, argue with the kids, secretly run off and binge Lost in Space. Finally, it's time for the tour. Then wait in line, walk around, and then, you know, my point is, if what we care about is the feeling of living history, and we figure out a way to keep history alive in a superior format, granted, we're dumb monkey brains, right? But if we have that, then what's so great about the actual places themselves?
I didn't initially get that from your argument, which was that there would be a technology because
you're a millennial and a robot.
This is a very funny joke. And I'm laughing very hard right now. There's a physical element to it, though, and if you're saying that there's a technology that does it, then I guess that's what it is. But I'm thinking, at least for today, which is very visual and very audible, you know, you can't beat the physical moment if it's something you care a lot about.
I think that is the idea of like, okay, well, what makes that up? When you go to Colonial Williamsburg, what's amazing about it and what's fun about it is that you're transformed into this place and there's some old codger trying to sell you a pinwheel or something stupid. But it's like you feel like, oh, this is what it was like to be in Colonial Williamsburg. If you could have that experience in a way that I think we're now like, scratching the surface of being able to do with virtual reality, but assume a few generations forward that, like, I don't know, maybe there is, I can, walking down this path, as insane as it first came from Brian's head, I do see a point where you will look at a physical place as not without merit, but maybe a degraded, the version that doesn't have the AI version of Thomas Jefferson that you're able to talk to when you go visit him.
Imagine visiting Stonehenge now versus visiting Stonehenge, and for all I know, they've already done this. You know, you get to Stonehenge, so you're at the actual place. You strap on the goggles, and then you see it with all of you know, the rocks set up in the right way. And it's like, why physically wait for the winter solstice for the exact right moment to have the beam of light go through and prove that this is a calendar? Why not experience that anytime while you're there at Stonehenge? And so imagine you're there at this magical moment. You're looking around like, I can't believe it. You walk over and then you reach forward and you're physically touching the exact rock and the exact place and all that stuff.
Sure.
Then go one step beyond that and say, why did I travel 3,000 miles to get here for this? You know, what if I had the exact same feeling without bothering to use physical resources? That's what I'm asking.
Sure. I mean, I guess... Yeah, I mean, all of that. In a world where the physical thing can be replicated, I think that's good. I think there's a case, but I think it was last year during the eclipse. Like, you went and made that big journey for the eclipse. Oh, if you virtualize the eclipse,
that's a low blow. You got me good on that one. Yeah, I mean, you nailed it. You nailed it, because
drove out to go find a space to hope you could see it.
And you're right.
Cover.
You're right. There's nothing. That I can imagine throwing on a pair of VR goggles and
now, hold on, wait a minute,
having
wait a minute
that there. Transcended experience.
Tell me that now that you've had it, right? Imagine you've had that experience, so you know what it feels like. If you could have a virtualized experience for eclipses where you wouldn't otherwise go, would you use it?
Okay. I hate to say it, but now, like, okay. There was a lot of risk.
Cancel the nukes on the Eiffel Tower.
No, hold on. There was a lot of risk involved. We gambled very, very hard on that eclipse trip.
Yeah.
And it might have gone the wrong way. And it is dumb luck that we had a transcendent experience. What if somebody comes to me, there's a knock at the door. They're like, hey, I see you're about to spend 5 days of driving and multiple thousands of dollars for a battle wagon stress and listening to podcasts as you drive your family for the chance of having a transcendent experience. We could throw these VR goggles on and you will see exactly the real-time feed from NASA in perfect clarity. Also, we're going to give you these mushrooms. You will most definitely have a transcendent experience with zero risk for you and the entire family. Like, at that point, what is the more responsible decision for a father? It's like, am I going to risk having a bad trip and not having a transcendent?
How many things can go wrong? We could run out of gas. We could be assaulted by marauders. You know, listen, I'm going to a highwayman's going to pull out his gun and put it to my daughter's temple, and it's my fault that I didn't take the mushrooms.
I'd be
a fool not to.
Yeah, that might be the calculus 50 years from now or 100 years from now.
Yeah, I think.
Sorry, man, this got really weird. We should call the show Weird Things.
I'm saying this started with Bryce saying, let's just keep these topics short. Like...
Well, here, let's go into another thing. I've got an investment pitch
just
for you.
Just for the record, the TLDR was Brian wants to disassemble all monuments and then reverse course when he realized he could do mushrooms. Or no, he could be sold mushrooms by a traveling mushroom and VR salesman.
That's redundant, Justin. All right.
That's exactly.
So I got an investor pitch for you guys. I need you guys. I want to sell you guys on this product straight out of China. And here's the great thing about this product.
By the way, hey, real quick, unsolicited pick. I've been using this app Wish. Oh, yeah. It's basically just a front end for like all the random crap on like AliExpress. But you can buy so many ridiculous external batteries, like just for your phone and stuff like that. I got one for like $5 that's also a like QI charger. It's great. It's totally useless. I'll buy a million of them because they'll probably all break or light on fire. But
yeah,
I enjoy buying cheap batteries. This is a new thing that I'm doing.
Anyway, I wouldn't know what you're talking about, says the man holding four 16 gigabyte thumb drives.
Wait, did you just buy a ton of flash drives?
I bought them.
I had one moment of realizing, man, when you need a flash drive, there's never one around. And you get on Amazon and it's like, well, if I'm going to buy one, it's a nickel more. Just give me 20. And yeah. I'm just laying them all around the house so there'll always be a flash drive ready.
So I've got a healing potion.
Oh, why don't you read the story, millennial? Come on. The real men are trying to have a conversation about buying things on the internet. Anyway, I watched Matlock. You want to stay on topic? Sure. Oh, update your Bebo.
In China, there is a healing potion. Oh. There's a healing potion. It's very well known. It is estimated that 40 million people have taken it. It's available at over 4,000 hospitals all around China. And it's
penicillin.
Interesting to make. It's interesting to make. This is
going to be something gross, isn't it? This has something gross written all. This is like an alligator's penis or a gorilla's scrot. Like, this is something weird, isn't it?
So it does require. Yes, it does require animal product. But thankfully, now the power of technology, big data, artificial intelligence has automated the reproduction of these animals. And so I just want to know if you guys are in or out.
No. Well, first of all, what's the efficacy? Because I don't mean to disparage our fine friends in China.
Sure.
But they've got a bit of a reputation of dubious solutions.
Yeah, for healing. Dubious.
Sure. Well, so look, this healing potion kind of cures whatever ails you.
Oh, wow. Well, that would be very impressive.
What, like a common cold?
It has remarkable effects on stomach pain and other ailments.
Oh, so like a Pepto-Bismol.
Kind of, yeah. It has a slightly sweet taste. It is tea-colored, has a slight fishy smell.
Man, these smell like Rocky Mountain oysters.
Not to mention, hey...
By the way, Pepto-Bismol made of Magilla gorilla's scrot.
Because it's pink. It's pink. Nice. That was a deep cut.
Google it. Google it, kids. You f***ing millennials. Sorry. God
damn. Got him. Got you, old man.
Ensnared. Ensnared by the millennial trap. Oh, I wave listlessly with my feet ensnared above me.
You did so good.
I'll tell you this, that these animal products have been used in traditional Chinese medicine for thousands of years. Infants are still occasionally fed this product with garlic.
Which animal's fever? Balls? Just let's pick. Which animal's balls are they?
It's not balls. I guess balls might be in it, technically.
It's the whole
organ.
It's kind of the whole thing.
I assume male genitalia of a tiger.
Okay, that's a good guess, Justin.
The male genitalia of a lion.
Male genitalia of a human being.
No, human, what? No.
Okay, all right. Look, man, just spitballing here. There's no wrong answers in brainstorming.
So, this is from Good Doctor Pharmaceuticals, because of course it is.
Wait, I'm sorry, is the doctor's name? Hello, I'm Dr. Pharmaceuticals.
No, it's...
I'm a bad attempt at a comedy sketch.
Although, by the way, Dr. Pharmaceutical, I wouldn't be shocked to see that on a mixtape.
No, it's one
did
word.
Did you catch Dr. Pharmaceuticals said at Coachella?
Oh, man, it was dope. Literally. It was opioids.
Yes.
Oh, whoa. Shocked him up on stage.
The Good Doctor Pharmaceutical Group comes out of Chengdu, Sichuan in China. I'm going to show you a photo of their factory here. And see if you guys can tell.
It's just a big set of hedge clippers.
And a bunch of sad looking tigers.
Exactly. Oh, no. Yeah. It's just Brutus the Barber Beefcake and a bunch of sad tigers.
So this is a two-floor factory.
It's a warehouse. This was all just to show a warehouse to me, huh?
Oh, God. No, it's not all about you today.
Go ahead, millennial.
This is a very funny joke, and I'm laughing very hard.
Millennial trying to distract the topic from my pain at all times.
I love you guys so much.
So this factory has very few human workers, almost the entirety of it, from the floor to the roof, is dedicated to breeding this animal.
Oh, my God.
Oh, is it like a tiny little animal? Is it like a wombat or like a chinchilla?
I think they're rat balls.
You think they're rats?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think what they do is they contract with all of the subway franchises for all the garbage, and they just throw it in there, and they let all the rats eat the healthiest food.
They're naturally sourced rats. They're not breeding them. They're just like leaving out a pile of garbage and then reaping the reward.
And then they're cutting off the genitals of the rats. I think it's
isn't it the year? Dan Wally says hamster. I wouldn't be shocked if it's a little hamster dance.
Okay. There's also a little bit of a danger to this factory, or this farm, rather. The town has near 800,000 inhabitants, and an accident could be, quote, terrifying, says Professor Zhu Chaodong from the Institute of Zoology.
They're monkeys.
The farm is also located close to Xichang's Qingshan Airport. Quote, multiple lines of defense must be in place and work properly to prevent the disaster of accidental release.
Oh, so wait, these have to be birds, because if all the birds got out, they would fly into the engines, and then there would be more Sully movies.
We don't want any more of those.
And listen, one's enough. It was fine, but stop it.
We get it. You did your job.
That's the message to Clint Eastwood.
Okay, so I think you guys are on the right trend of going smaller. Could you go any smaller than where you
are? Is it a lizard? Is it a little lizard penis?
Smaller. Wait, mosquitoes?
Little minnow.
You're on the right about the right size.
Okay, well hold on. Is this like crickets or lemony snickets or
you're close? You're really close.
Grasshoppers, locusts,
roaches,
encroaches,
cockroaches.
Oh.
This farm. This building produces six.
I don't want to see this. This is probably gross.
Thankfully, we don't have any imagery because it's kept dark and humid inside.
Yeah, but I mean, we all have here. I'm just going to go to image.google.com.
Yeah, just type in cockroach. This farm breeds 6 billion cockroaches every year, and it is run by an AI that detects food intake, temperature, humidity, and the size of the cockroaches. And when the cockroaches are of optimal size, they are crushed down into this miracle potion.
I was shockingly close with my Subway franchise throw the garbage out thing. What do they feed cockroaches?
I don't know. They probably need anything, I bet.
Other cockroaches? It's self-sustaining. We found perpetual motion.
But there's a very large concern of if there is a breach of this factory. It's reported that if even a dozen cockroaches were released into a single neighborhood, it could create very, very damaging effects to the environment.
Oh, because they breed so fast, and it would be like an invasive breeding thing. Yeah.
Wait. Because Xichang has a warm climate and ample rainfall, a dozen of them could infest an entire neighborhood very quickly.
Oh, yeah, no, that's no lie, man. Like, if the roach infestation goes fast.
Why would the airport be afraid of them, though?
Well, you don't want an infestation in the airport. You would like to think that an airport is pretty much a closed system.
I would, because it would cause everybody – the lines would move a lot faster. They'd be like,
I don't
want
to be chased around by roaches.
Yeah,
and what's the deal with airplane cockroaches? Brian, you're just inventing this bizarre scenario so you can get over your weird airport line phobia.
Man, by the way, for the first time, I had both clear and TSA pre. Heaven! It was heaven.
Yep. Right?
Okay.
Oh, totally.
The other concern is that because this factory is breeding so many cockroaches at one time so quickly, that the cockroaches could potentially evolve into an even more dangerous insect. Though this is from the same Professor Zhu. Every cockroach is a super cockroach. Mother Nature has already done its job. There is little room left for us to make improvements.
Yeah, except for us to punish them for their success by making them factory workers.
Well,
the cockroaches? I mean,
look,
and then eating their bodies.
I was gonna say, yeah, they're also the product. But they're working really hard on dying for our enjoyment.
Imagine working really, really hard at the Soylent Green factory and then figuring out like, oh wait,
I can't leave. I'm gonna be turned into Soylent Green. Look at that. Oh well,
you put yourself into your work, you know. We have a video here from the National Geographic. If we wait for the Chevy ad to finish up, here we go.
Chevy. Yeah. You ever walk and drive around your cockroach ranch?
Oh, my mixer's broken. I can't seem to turn this ad off.
The new Silverado. Crush over 20,000 cockroaches in less than 12 seconds guaranteed. It's a road less traveled Chevrolet. Like a roach.
Oh, like a roach.
Before we get into this,
you've got a roach farm that you want to leave to your kids and them to leave to theirs. That's why you drive a Chevy. I'm Dennis Leary. Sometimes you just want to just ride over with 16 tons of roach-crushing beast.
All right. Here's how it goes. You got 15 roaches and 2 hours to eat all of them. You got 14 pounds of pressure.
Before I show you this video, there's
that's what you need, the super honking double charge Chevy driving car.
That's Chinese ingenuity, Chevy.
Before we watch this video, I want you
it's
guys.
It's good for what ails you.
I want you guys to tell me a little bit about the most talked about animal on this show.
Snakes.
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 Specifically, yeah. How they eat and what they eat.
Yeah, they eat a lot of things, man. Those snakes are they're wily.
But they have a very particular way of eating because they don't have, say, arms or legs.
So they have to suffocate their prey and then dislodge their jaw and then just sort of hide under a stump for, you know, long enough to finish a few games of Hearthstone.
Yeah.
Well, what if I told you that, that snakes were even deadlier?
Just saying, man, a lot of these examples are seeming very specific.
I'm just imagining, like, once you eat an entire calf, like, what are you going to do? Well, yeah, I mean, you just got to wait to digest everything before you can even move
you
again.
You have to play Hearthstone with your snake tongue.
That's right. I like the poisonous minions.
Because I'm a snake. Get
it? So we have the cat-eyed water snake. This snake was found to do something that snakes don't always do. Can you describe the video that we're looking at?
It looks like he's got is that a crab in his hand?
Yep, it's a crab.
Okay, so the snake is chewing. Oh, there we go. So we see it's biting off the leg. Mm-hmm. Ripped off a leg.
That's right. And that's the crazy thing about the snake is that
Was that a smart enough to tear stuff into pieces like a civilized snake? This is the most civilized snake.
Oh, this is like the James Bond of snakes.
It uses its body to constrict its prey and tear apart, in the case of soft-shell crabs here, tear the legs off and then either
this is like a DreamWorks CGI movie. They're going to be like, hey, guys, I'm the one snake who figured out we can. It's the Ratatouille of snake movies.
By the way, like, I just want to point out that this snake is eating a crab more elegantly than I do than I ever have at any crab restaurant. Like, this is a far more civilized way to crack a shell and eat a crab than I have ever done in my life.
This is like, well, the snake is voiced by Woody Allen. He's reprising his role from Ants. He's just like, I don't know, just eating it all at once. Why do we do that? It just seems like we could tear it apart and then we wouldn't have to. See, he's so bloated. He looks ridiculous.
Too bad the voice is going to have to be replaced by Christopher Plummer.
The other behavior of the cat-eyed water snake goes hand-in-hand with the fact that it likes eating crabs. Hard-shell crabs that have shells, very hard to eat. Snakes don't chew their food. The cat-eyed water snake will actually wait for a crab to molt.
To get that soft.
That's right.
I'm telling you, Ratatouille as hell. And Woody Allen is just like, you can't. How can you enjoy it like this? This is awful.
This is from NationalGeographic.com. They only go after freshly molted crabs in the 10 to 15 minute period after the animals shed their old shells.
They're all, they should call it the Gordon Ramsay snake.
Because it needs it just right.
Yeah, because they understand it has a cultured palate.
It curses at the crabs.
That's right. That's right. It stirs up controversy.
Yeah. It's just like, why are you mean? Why are you so mean, snake?
Because it's my gimmick. This is awful. It's like a crab had a hard shell. Get out of here.
It's raw.
Yeah. Back up your snake skin and get out of my mossy area.
he's up against the crab eating contest against the Guy Fieri snake, who's just like, just cover it in horsey sauce or whatever. Let's go.
The other
just
really
cover it in horsey sauce.
Why you gotta
that
be such
famous
a baby?
Snake Guy Fieri catchphrase, just cover it in horsey sauce. Let's go.
I think if it was a crab, it would be seahorsey sauce.
Seahorsey sauce.
Now, ex-Cameron in the chat has
typical
a
typical millennial trying to one-up.
I mean, yes, we were going in that direction, but we didn't want to go there so fast.
It's a very funny joke, and I'm laughing very hard.
You didn't need to be the one to get all the credit for making the funniest joke, is all what we're saying.
So ex-Cameron in the chat asks, what does it eat if the crabs aren't molting? And this is another interesting wrinkle about this, is that this is very risky for the snake. To quote one of the researchers, if the snakes are small enough and they attack a hard-shelled crab instead of a soft-shelled crab, instead of getting dinner, they may become dinner.
Yeah.
So they're in.
Oh, so it's either they win or they die.
Right. And if they don't attack a crab at just the right moment where their bodies are still soft, they could become food for a crab instead. It's interesting to see.
I mean, that's not too what's interesting is how close this is to the human experience of eat or be eaten. You know, it's like that whole idea of we oftentimes think of predator and prey trying to get away, but now you got predator and can handle themselves predator, you know, where it's like, you're like, I'm sorry, you're at your tastiest. And you're like, you're wrong, old man. I was born in 1994.
Very funny. But it's just interesting because you would think that those feeding
all of
habits.
My references to children's programming are much younger than yours.
You would just
I'm
think
a crab.
You would just think that the feeding habits would change to something more stable or safer.
Yeah, but the stomach wants what the stomach wants.
That's true. Crabs are good.
Finally, they have the best taste in food.
In seafood,
out of the snakes, this snake eating this crab.
Oh yeah. Oh, this is probably a good
great
snake.
Taste. Expensive taste.
Yeah,
a refined palate.
So I have one last little story here.
Cover it in horsey sauce. Let's go.
And it takes place in good old Florida, in Florida, USA.
Hey, big shout out.
The Conservancy of Southwest Florida has been tracking some wildlife in Florida. They give the males of the species trackers to lead them to the females. so that they can control the population of this species. I'm sure you can already guess what animal I'm talking about.
Snakes!
Snakes. That's right. The Everglades are infected with pythons.
Yeah, we've talked about this. They have like open season, and open season is literally all the time because they want them gone.
They had. I think that they stopped that. That wound up getting a lot of criticism, not necessarily because it was there to kill snakes, but rather that it was getting lost in the Everglades is like a real problem, and there's a lot of ways that things can go really wrong really fast in the Everglades. Mm-hmm. I mean, hell, like even Brian and I and you guys can go along with us on the Discovery VR app where you can watch our adventures.
Yeah.
Even those, like even out in that, like, and this was about as docile as the Everglades get. We were out on an airboat. You know,
instantly
you get out there,
lost track of where I was, right?
Yeah.
And you could say, oh, rely on your GPS or whatever. It's like, that's great when you're within signal of a highway or whatever. But you walk 20 minutes out there and you make the wrong call, you're just walking forever and you die in that saltwater marsh.
Or like, you know, like things that happen, you know, you run out of gas or, you know, something like that. It's not exactly AAA, like, you know, rolling on out to you. So right. I'm pretty sure that they pulled back on that. But anyway, so what's the story now?
So the Conservancy has a Burmese python named Argo that they use. He's about, excuse me. A Burmese python named Argo. He's got a tracker on him to find other pythons, especially for mates. The females are sort of the targets to bring down reproduction of snakes here. And what Argo found was this. This is but an image of some of the pythons that were found.
Oh my God.
They found 7 pythons.
Oh, Jesus.
Having a very huge snake orgy.
What?
Nice. This is a family podcast.
Okay.
So we just know that when a snake loves 4 or 5 other snakes very much.
Yep. And they all live in Southwest Florida. And like they might even be past retirement age. They're not here to be judged.
This is the largest breeding aggregation discovered in Collier County near Naples. And at the center of it all was a 15-foot-long, 115-pound female python surrounded by 6, quote, randy males.
Uh-oh. Now that's a party.
Wildlife biologist.
That lady getting it in.
She walks out. She's like, I want randy randos. Don't matter. Let's go.
Fittingly enough, this was discovered around Valentine's Day. to quote wildlife biologist Ian Bartacek, quote, it was intense. It was a lot of snake in one spot. but this is super dangerous, and it's good that they were able to find a mating aggregation, as it were, because pythons don't belong in the Everglades. They're not from the Everglades, and they can really destroy the circle of life and the feeding circle and the food chain.
Yeah. And it's always so interesting with that you always hear about these invasive species, be they animals or plants or something. And you just kind of wonder like, well, obviously it's disrupting the natural harmony that we have charted. But like, isn't that kind of the story of all ecology, is that things come in and disrupt and then it rebalances? Like,
I guess that's true, though. I think the concern is that because of the ecology of the Everglades, that the snakes could very quickly wipe out the rest of the native species.
Oh yeah, no. This is a for real thing. I'm not trying to downplay.
Oh, sure.
You know that it's a major issue out there in the Everglades or in any of the other cases that we have seen. But like, you almost kind of wonder, like, I mean. Yeah, I mean, it's certainly happening more than it would otherwise, because this is happening because people, idiots in Florida, are buying pythons and then realizing that they grow too much. And they're like, well, we got to get rid of Doug, the snake. So let me drive out to the Everglades and throw it out the window and drive back to my idiot home in Hialeah.
Yeah.
And now we have this large problem. So it is human cause, but I guess, I don't know. I just figure At some point, maybe they were meant to rule the Everglades, the snakes, and we are only getting in the way of their final conquest.
To put a little bit of context on the, the bounty of this find, they've provided a photo here of the inside of the female who had, let me get the exact number, 60 eggs inside of her.
That's a lot of eggs.
It's a lot of eggs. And wow. 60, you know, I mean,
okay, 60... I'm less concerned about the number of eggs and more concerned about the posing of what looks to be a stock photo of all of the model good looking people.
This is a Facebook photo.
Like, no, gather around, guys, gather around. We're at the buffet and grab eggs.
This is like old country buffet.
Oh, God. Exactly. Like, you're just going to bring him to the dude who's at the omelet station right behind me.
Can you put some crab in this? So that's it for stories today. Thank you guys for helping me get through a lot. Do you guys have picks?
Oh my gosh. Do I ever? I think I mentioned it last week, but I'm going to double down on Lost in Space. Lost in Space is just great. I'm halfway through the first season. I'm taking my time. Just finished episode 5 last night. They do a good job of adding. It's ostensibly something you can watch with your kids, but the interesting parts are some of the conniving, scheming aspects between various characters.
Yeah.
Production quality is second to none. It's great. Loving it.
Very cool. Justin, you got something?
Yeah. You want to know what a show that I gave a lot of crap last season had its premiere last night, and that was Westworld. And I quite enjoyed the Westworld episode, and I think it is a bold and admirable choice for that show to try having plots.
because mean conflicts and factions and characters and a good guy's and
motivations
a bad guy's
and people trying to work toward problems and not just dangling dumb mysteries in your face and then saying, solve them. Oh, you can't, idiot. Come back tomorrow.
Did you notice the throwaway line where they're all like, so anyway, we've been at war for 2 weeks, but every vignette, every set piece, every character is going to look like it's the day after things started.
Well, there's...
Okay. I still haven't finished it. I have 10 more minutes. Okay. So maybe that's what they're doing.
Well, they're...
The way that they
shockingly,
set up...
Shockingly, it seems as if we're dealing with more than one timeline.
Got it.
Without, you know, it being...
Without it being acknowledged. Okay.
Yeah. It's weird, but very good premiere.
At least both of them, it's like you immediately have context and you know all the characters, or at least are fairly introduced to all the characters. And it's not like another show may or may not be related to this one, where in their first season they just had a bunch of characters that didn't mean anything that they were saying, oh man, what isn't this? It's crazy. You should fall in love with this mysterious character. I wonder if he's related to this other mysterious character that we're going to be dealing with. Oops. Yeah. Remember that thing you called in episode 3? It's revealed to be true in episode 12. Mm. Look at my fingers. Aren't they weird?
I got a pick, you guys.
Yeah.
There's a lot of new stuff on Netflix. Between Lost in Space, Lost in Space is very good. There's a new show that premiered on Friday. A lot of shows premiered on Friday. But one of them is a Japanese cartoon. We talked about it on Cord Killers a little bit when it was announced. Agretsuko. Do you remember this at all, Brian?
I do, now that I'm seeing the pictures of it, yeah.
It's about a little red panda girl who works in an office.
It's very kawaii style.
Yeah, it's by Sanrio. These are Sanrio characters also, who by day is kind of got a not menial, but a very intense and stressful job.
It looks like it could be an Adult Swim show.
Oh, yeah, it could be. And at night, she sings death metal in karaoke to get all of her rage and anger out about her bosses and her coworkers and... There's something really nice about it. It's rated. Netflix has started like TV rating all of their shows now, so it's very
easy. Which I don't mind.
It's good.
I would have protested that like 30 years ago, but now as a parent, I'm like, well, that's convenient. So that I know, you know, at a glance.
And like it would be helpful for this, which looks very cutesy, but it definitely deals with some adult elements, not like racy or mature things, but adult themes that I think younger kids wouldn't get. They rated a TV 14. But it's very well done, and also it's very short. There are only 10 episodes, and they're all 15 minutes each. So it lends itself to kind of getting in and telling the story and having little beats and then getting out. It's really well done. And the people who made it, the writer and the director, I guess, has been making lots of little cartoons like this online in Japan for a long time. So it has a very, like,
YouTube-y.
Internet feel.
Yeah.
Yeah. Almost like an old Flash style.
A little Homestar Runner.
A little.
Yeah.
But then when you get into like the modern niceties that modern animation gives you, it looks really good. And also it has a pretty good English dub for a Japanese show. The English dub's pretty good. The translation is also pretty good. So that's Agretzko. I don't know why they called it that. In Japan, it's Aggressive Retzko. Which I think is at least easier to find. But anyway, that's my pick. Anything else, guys, for weird things?
No, man.
Brian, Justin?
I think we're good. We're good to go, ladies and germs.
All righty. Well, thank you guys for joining us. And we'll see you guys next week because it's been weird.
Typical millennial sign on.
It's very funny, and we're laughing very hard.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.